Four's Company, Saturday mornings here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier in studio with you. No Nick Kieser yet, still on his honeymoon. We'll have him back next week. Connor Newt, the greatest producer in all the land, is back behind the glass. Happy Saturday morning, Nashville. Glad to be with you. We're with you till 10:45 today, off a little bit early as we lead into Vanderbilt baseball taking on High Point elimination game over in the Clemson Regional. So a little bit of a shortened show, but we are excited to be with you once again here on Four's Company. Nick, how you doing?
I am phenomenal this morning. The one thing that I was looking forward to was kind of sharing my headlines for today.
So yes, go ahead.
College football video game.
Wow, you stole Connor Newt's.
It's usually me.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Stealing his thunder.
Yeah.
But I will say about the college football video game, I have heard some stuff about Mississippi State's Cowbells.
It's in it.
It's in there.
Yeah.
And boy, am I excited.
I think the best thing that we've learned about this game is how tradition-driven it is. They said, we are going to give you the authentic feel of college football. I am disappointed that my Hokies won't have the true Enter Sandman experience. Virginia Tech's football Twitter account lied to us. They said Enter Sandman's about to go crazy. It's not in the game, but I'm excited to see just every game you go to, there's going to be some sort of tradition or a little wrinkle that you see with the fans, which will be cool.
You know, the thing that I think you might want to look into is that I know in Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3s, like they had that capability of downloading whatever song you wanted and put it on a USB stick, and they had like a files import section where you could just import any stadium sound. So maybe that might be an option.
I feel like it would be funnier if I put something other than Enter Sandman in, like
just another Metallica song.
Row, row, row your boat, or like the wheels Baby on the Shark. Bus go round and round, and it's like you see the whole stadium jumping up and down for it or something like that.
I'd put that in for like Tennessee running out of it.
Or be Connor and just play some SpongeBob coming back from one of the
bands. Hey, yeah. You liked the SpongeBob.
Yeah, but they're like the dubstep SpongeBob. So I'm like, all right. It's
cool. I only played it because Kieser hates it when I play it.
It's
it made him mad, and it was his last show for a while. So I was like, let's send him off.
On a sour note. Oh,
man. No, but it is exciting to see all this. The gameplay looks great for this. I know there are probably people out there who are like, why do these guys talk about this video game so much? But it's for people our age. This is a long time coming. We played this growing up, and it's finally back after a decade.
A little bit of a tearjerker, but you know what?
I know.
We're feeling good today.
I know. And Connor mentioned it this morning. We are now officially in the month before it is released. It is June. We've got one more full month to get through, and then we are finally ready for College Football 25. Let's just go into our question of the day right now then, before we get to our other headlines, just because it ties in well. Our question of the day. As part of the release yesterday on the gameplay, we found out that there is a stadium pulse that shows, you know, home field advantage, which atmospheres are the hardest to play in, and it's going to make it more difficult on you depending on where you're going. I believe I saw that Death Valley in LSU is rated as the highest atmosphere. It is the hardest place to play. But I want to hear from you guys, and I also want to hear from our audience. What do you think is the best college football atmosphere? You can text or call 615-737-1025. Our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We want to know, what do you think is the hardest place to play the best college football atmosphere in the entire country? Again, text or call. Let us know. Frazier, do you have a specific thought of a place that stands out to you?
Well, you mentioned Death Valley with Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I've been to a game down in Death Valley. It is absolutely deafening.
Yeah.
But there's something about those Cowbells. 2014, I'll never forget it. It was the day Mississippi State became the first team in college football playoff era history to beat number one overall seed. And that was when they beat Auburn on Saturday, a 2:30 CBS game. It was incredible. It was raining in the fourth quarter. Dak Prescott takes the kneel, and then he runs over to the student section and goes crazy. That's when I had a coffee mug thrown at me on the third deck of the stadium.
You ever been to an Egg Bowl?
I have.
Yeah? How was it?
Actually, no, I'm sorry. I have not been to an Egg Bowl. Excuse me. I have been to, the Tennessee-Vandy rivalry game. Oh, excuse me. It wasn't the Egg Bowl. I know the Egg Bowl's Mississippi State Ole Miss, but it's played on every Thanksgiving. That is on the bucket list. Would love to go to a Thanksgiving Egg Bowl. That's on my bucket
list. Except they moved it to Black Friday next
year.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not a fan of that.
No, not me neither.
There's a lot of schedule changes that are happening in college football that are upsetting a lot of people, especially the Oklahoma and Texas matchup. Yeah, that they talked about the other day. I'm chasing Big Joe. Oh, boy. Get some Texas fans riled up.
Well, did you see some of the fans were upset yesterday because in the gameplay trailer, Oklahoma's end zone was on the wrong side? I'm like, this is not a finished product. I'm sure they will fix it before the game comes out.
Well, they got mad at another Oklahoma-related problem, too.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Jackson Arnold was the wrong skin tone, we'll say.
Connor, do you have an atmosphere that stands out to you?
Yeah, I'll give you two. One that I've been to and one that I haven't. The one I've been to, I last year I went to Bryant-Denny Stadium in Tuscaloosa, Alabama's obviously, and I watched them play MTSU. They gave us $20 tickets. We drove down, stayed at the hotel, and watched an ass-whooping. But, yeah, that environment is crazy, especially heading into the fourth. They play Dixieland Delight, and that whole stadium is just rocking with the pom-poms and you know, they're singing and wooing, and it's electric. But the one I absolutely dream of going to is Happy Valley, Penn State.
I was going
to
say that,
Penn
too.
Penn State whiteout game. They are, I would argue, the best in the nation in a primetime whiteout game versus, like, Ohio State or a Michigan or, you know, anyone.
They never win. But the atmosphere is
amazing. But it's cool.
Yep.
They always play. I've seen that clip on Twitter, the Mo Bamba clip.
Yeah. That's also in the game.
Yeah.
Mo Bamba is. I'm sure it'll be cleaned up a little bit. Yeah. But
My uncle was a big Penn State fan, and they went, I think, 2 years ago to a, I think it was Michigan State versus Penn State, and it was like a checkerboard. It was like part blue, part white. It wasn't a full whiteout, but he said the atmosphere was unbelievable. So.
I will be a little bit of a homer and say the best atmosphere I've ever been in is still Lane Stadium in Blacksburg. There's only 66,000 people in that stadium. For reference, the Big House at Michigan has 108, 109, somewhere around there. So 60% capacity. Tech is still one of the top atmospheres in college football. Sam Howell came out last year. They asked him, like, what's the hardest place you've had to play? I think they were going to Seattle or something for a road game, and he said Virginia Tech.
So
I do remember that game. It was the first game after COVID when he came in there, and everybody was just raring to go because it had been a year and a half since anybody had been in that stadium. It was really, really loud that night. But I think Penn State certainly is one that I'd want to go to. LSU, for sure. I'm trying to think of any other ones. South Carolina, Connor mentioned. South Carolina, for a program that hasn't really been all that successful lately, like, they still have one of the better atmospheres in college football. I think Michigan's kind of overrated.
I was going to say, the Big House.
You've got 110,000 people. Like, it should be a better atmosphere in there.
Yeah.
Not saying it's bad. Same with the Horseshoe.
Yeah, that is a bit underwhelming. You're right.
I think some of those Big Ten schools, like, they're just not as rowdy as they are down south.
You think it's the TV, like, I know Fox has a lot of Big Ten stuff. You think it's the TV broadcast that kind of hypes it up a little too much, and they just underperform in the crowd?
Yeah. And then again, Wisconsin, in the same area of the country, jump around, I think, is one of the most electric things in college football, too. I love when the Fox broadcast, like, if they have a big game, they won't go to commercial at the end of the third quarter. They'll actually show you the whole thing, which is awesome. Again, not in the video game. No jump around. But
yeah. You know, EA, you've had 10 years to get this right. And the one thing you don't do is get the proper songs for the proper traditions. That's my only little pet peeve.
That stuff's expensive, though.
I know, the licensing fees.
Licensing's expensive.
They're gonna make buka money off of just people buying the game. Just bite the bullet, put out a phenomenal product, and then call it a day.
Yeah, but I guess, are you going to get enough money for people? Like, is there any extra financial incentive to get those games in? Because I think anybody who's going to buy the game isn't going, or anybody who wasn't going to buy the game isn't going to buy the game just because Enter Sandman and Jump Around's in there.
It's true. There are people that will try to find a way to put it in there.
I am going to buy it just because Mo Bamba's in there, though.
Yeah.
Quickly, headlines. My quick one, I forget where I heard this, but I thought it was interesting. This year, within a year, if the Stars are able to come back and beat Edmonton, three of the four Dallas teams will be playing for a championship. The Rangers already won the World Series. The Mavericks are going to the NBA Finals. The Stars now down 3-2, but they're two games away from going to the Finals. The Dallas Cowboys are the only Dallas sports team that is just absolutely nowhere near a championship, which I think is hilarious. Jerry Jones has to be punching air down there.
America's That's what my dad was talking to me about last night. He said, I bet the NHL is hoping Edmonton wins now. And I was like, why is that? He's like, well, Dallas is in the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
And they both play in the American Airlines Arena, so it's a scheduling nightmare for probably both of them, I think.
Well, and also, you get Edmonton in there, all of Canada is going to be rooting for Edmonton.
Yeah.
It's been, what, 30 years since a Canadian team won the Stanley Cup?
Yeah. St. Patty's curse.
So I think the NHL knows that if Edmonton gets in, you might as well double the viewership because you're going to get all of Canada rooting on the Oilers.
Yeah. Well, quickly, my headline. Yesterday, the Bills signed a defensive tackle, and it was Gable Steveson. If you don't know who that is, he's an Olympic gold medalist wrestler. And then the funniest part about it to me is he had a tenure in the WWE. He just came off of, I guess it just didn't work out, and he had some stuff going on. He did some things that were not good. But, he's the Bills are signing him as a defensive tackle. And, I mean, it's just kind of weird to me. But good for him and good for them, I guess, finally signing defense for once.
I'm telling you, it's definitely based off this NFL new kickoff format. That's just me. I mean, when you got a guy like that, I mean, he's a gold medalist. You see his giant, structure of his body. He could easily be some sort of blocker.
I was wondering if it was just like a training camp combine signing.
Probably so, but at the same time, you're bringing in rugby guys, you're bringing in wrestling guys, you're bringing in a bunch of people from all over the world, like in all different facets of sport. Like, it's going to be for something, and I think it's the kickoff.
Yeah, I mean, you got 90 guys on the roster. It can't hurt to bring in a guy that big and physical who has experience winning against other humans. Like I think that's the big thing when you're in the trenches. It's like, can I impose my will on the guy in front of me? And obviously this guy, you win an Olympic gold medal in wrestling, you have pretty good experience with that. So can't hurt. Bring him in for training camp. We'll see what happens. That's a good headline there, Connor. Quickly, nutrition before we get a break.
I had cereal this morning, but I had Life. If you've ever heard of that.
That's a great cereal.
It's pretty good.
I love me some Life.
Life with banana in it. It was good.
It's a great board game.
Yeah.
It is.
Game of Life.
Yeah, Life. Really well-rounded. Cereal.
Cereal's even better.
Board game. Great stuff. Nutrition. Again, our question of the day is, what do you think is the best atmosphere in college football as we count down the days, not only to the college football season, but the college football video game coming out in July? Text or call 615-737-1025. We've got a great show planned for you. Coming up next, we're going to talk some Preds. We've also got some Titans talk this hour, looking at back at this week of OTAs. And also, we're going to get you set for Vanderbilt and High Point, with a lot of college baseball talk coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. Preds talk up next here on Four's Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Four's Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Saturday mornings here. We are a little shorter today with you till 10:45 because Vanderbilt is in the 2024 NCAA Division I tournament and will compete in the Clemson Regional today. Vandy boys facing High Point. Pregame show at 10:45, first pitch at 11 right here on 102.5, 106.3. The Game. Vanderbilt baseball brought to you by Smoky Mountain Tops, your countertop experts. Visit SmokyMountainTops.com. And we will talk a lot about what was a fun day of college baseball yesterday. We'll do that in the 10 o'clock hour. But let's talk some Preds. Some news yesterday that assistant coach Dan Hynote was let go. We also saw the Preds bring in Mitch Korn to be their director of goaltending this week. Andrew Brunette starting to sort out his coaching staff after year one. And I think it's good to see that he's making adjustments after the first year. He's not getting complacent with, all right, well, these guys got us to the playoffs. We can just stick with the same old, same old. He said that, hey, it's not good enough to just be a wild card team. We've got to make the adjustments to get to the next level.
Yeah, and, you know, the one thing that really sticks out to me about just the whole coaching staff and Dan Hynote and so forth is that, did Brian McDonough kind of know this was coming? I know he, you know, wanted to go back to Tampa Bay, but at the same time, you kind of think, did he know the writing was on the wall for some coaches in the locker room? I mean,
it's possible.
Players and coaches, they know a little bit more than the outside media. And I will say it's a good thing and a bad thing for the Preds. A good thing, like you're saying, Bruno's bringing people that he wants.
Yeah.
Also, to me, it says Andrew Burnett and Barry Trotz are not wanting – that's the best way to put it. They do not want to set up for mediocrity.
Yeah.
Straight up, do not want to set up for mediocrity because looking here at the Tennessean, courtesy of Alex Doherty, the penalty kill this year for the Preds ranked 18th in the league, which is 78.9% for his 4 years in Nashville, which is middle of the pack.
Yeah.
I mean, personally, just speaking, it's middle of the pack. The Preds are always stuck in that mucky middle of being middle of the pack in the draft and just the seasons in general. I'm pretty sure this is that new era of Barry Trotz and Andrew Burnett where they're thinking, this is a championship-winning caliber team that we can get it to the next step. Let's do it. Let's bring in guys that we know are perennial winners, not players, but also coaches that are going to help our young youth core that I was talking about a few weeks ago that, you know, you have all these young guys in Milwaukee. Get those coaches that can help bring them to the next level. And when you do that, you're going to increase the ROI on players that are already on your roster. If you wanted to sell them later on, you have awesome trade value with some draft picks. Like, the Preds are now setting themselves up for a new Stanley Cup window. Let's put it that way. I know there's some old core guys that are still on this team, but they're opening up a new Stanley Cup window, in my opinion, to maybe 5 years down the road.
Yeah, and we don't know who they're going to bring in to replace Dan Hynote yet, and we'll keep an eye on that, obviously. But the moves this week, I am encouraged that Andrew Burnett is being flexible. And bring in, obviously, Mitch Korn has such a resume of success working with goalies at the NHL level, even here in Nashville. Mm-hmm. But, and I'll make a Titans comparison that I was talking to you about, that, you know, a lot of the complaints about Mike Vrabel is that he was too loyal to his coaching staff and he wouldn't fire Todd Downing after 1 year when everybody said that Downing made the offense take a step back. And he hired is it Jason Hotelling, the offensive line coach, who is the assistant to the guy that he just fired in last year. And, you know, people are saying, seeing Bill Callahan out there with this offensive line, it's like two completely different philosophies. The turbo Jared Stillman talks about seeing with Jason Hotelling and Keith Carter and those guys. It's like now Bill Callahan, he is a competent offensive line coach, more than competent, obviously. He's a legendary offensive line coach, and you're seeing the difference in how he's preparing these guys. It's good to see that Andrew Burnett, after 1 year, and it's his first year as a permanent NHL head coach, mm-hmm. that, hey, I don't know everything when I first got the job, and I don't know exactly how to build my staff. And guess what? I'm not going to just settle if this guy was average. And I think that I can make an upgrade there. And I'm glad that we're seeing this from Andrew Burnett.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when you bring in a guy like Mitch Korn, who's very familiar with the Preds, being here 16 years while Barry Trotz was the head coach here, you know, it just makes me think you have a young guy like Askarov, you have a guy like UC Soros, you bring in a very veteran-esque coach that kind of, let's put it this way, he's the, I don't want to say this, but I'll say it anyways, the Bill Callahan of goaltending coaches? Is that fair to
say?
That
seems fair, yeah. Okay.
So then with that being said, you're bringing in a guy that knows the left and rights of the pipes, and he's there to help, I guess, guide Soros in the right direction, but also help a young guy like Askarov learn at a very fast pace and learn quickly for that most part.
And I think that that's probably a main reason why they brought him in is, hey, we know how much talent Yaroslav Askarov has, and he's so young. Let's see if we can get him to that potential, because that's all you can do as a coaching staff. Like, hey, this guy has all the talent. Let's make sure that he is given every opportunity to reach that ceiling. If Yaroslav Askarov is immature and doesn't take it seriously, that's on him. But let's give him every opportunity to be successful. And bringing in a guy like Mitch Korn, It seems like that's the best possible way to have him start to ascend a little bit, and maybe I know the talk has been, hey, maybe 3-4 years down the road is when he would kind of succeed UC Soros.
Right.
Maybe that happens sooner.
It is possible. I mean, you know, the one thing I look at, and especially listening back to some shows we've had in the past, not just this show, but during the week, Elliot Friedman, who comes on with the Midday Show, I believe it was either Caroline or Willie that asked the question about, you know, what's the future looking like for UC Soros and Yaroslav Askarov? Like, what's the 1-2 like combo looking like? And Elliot, he basically said that, like, it is definitely the Preds want to have both. In a dream scenario, they want to have both. And with bringing back Mitch Korn and this little aspect of the coaching staff, bringing in, like, director of goaltending, it definitely, to me, feels like they're trying to keep both. They're not trying to get rid of one or keep the other. Like, it really does feel like trying to keep both. And unfortunately for Kevin Lankinen, he might be the odd man out.
Yeah, and you look at the situation that may be the best for Yaroslav Askarov, having a great director of goaltending like Mitch Korn, and then you get to learn from UC Soros, too. We saw what UC was able to pick up from Pekka. So I think bringing a 24, 25-year-old Yaroslav Askarov up to Nashville and letting him be the backup and letting him learn, that may be the best way for us to see if he can actually reach what we hope that he can become.
Yeah.
Connor, any thoughts on the recent coaching changes for the Preds?
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering, this may be a really long shot, do you think they offer Carl Taylor a job?
I think it was Alex Doherty who was talking about that yesterday, too. Let me see if I can bring up his tweet.
Because, I mean, he's doing a lot down in Milwaukee, and I'm wondering if he's holding out for a head coaching job later down the line. Like, you know, I think there's an opening in San Jose, and there's a few other openings. But I'm wondering if the Preds want to gradually transition him to an assistant coach to get him more of a limelight, and then he can take the head coaching job somewhere else. But, yeah, that's kind of where my headset's at right now.
Looking at this tweet from Alex Doherty last night, he said, many are coming with the Carl Taylor to Nashville takes. He says it's a long shot, not saying it can't happen, but he thinks the move is about Bruno getting one more of his guys on the bench. And that, it does make sense. Dan Hynote was a John Hines guy, so everybody's going to do that. Like, we're seeing Rand Carthon start to work through his scouting staff and bring in more of his guys. Like, it's going to happen. You might take a guy from the previous staff just for some carryover, but I think everybody wants to get their staff that they want, and a lot of the time that doesn't include guys from your predecessor.
And I will say, the sentiment that Barry Trotz said at the very beginning of his general managing, you know, career here in Nashville, he goes, this will take time. Like, this is not a 1-year thing. Like, you got to give it some time. So with that being said, for Andrew Burnett's sake, you don't want to bring in too many of your guys. You want to bring in for your system, because if you have too much, I get not roster turnover, but coaching turnover with the staff, your players are going to be lost. Now, I'm not saying, like, oh, my God, they're not pros. They're not going to do it. I'm like, no. You got to ease into it, in my opinion. That's how you got to do things. You can't just go cold turkey, cut it out. That's not good in the diet. We got to go this way. Like, gently, gently. It's a gradual change. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it takes a few years. You're not always going to come in and get hired and without seeing these guys in action know, okay, this staff is my perfect staff. It's going to take some time to, okay, my number one coach, he wasn't great this year, so we're going to move on from him. But this guy, maybe I didn't know him before from the previous staff, but he was awesome, and he's going to stick around. So it takes some time. But maybe not for the Titans. As we heard from Rand Carthon this week, they got their number one choice at all their assistant coaching positions this year.
And they knew everyone who was going to be drafted. They knew Penix was coming to the Falcons.
Incredible.
And it was really, really hard on Rand Carthon and his family that they fired Mike Vrabel.
And I do want to be clear. I'm being a little bit sarcastic saying that, because I know that Rand said that Brian Callahan had tiers, and he said that they kind of got their guy from tier one in every spot. But a lot of positivity coming out of St. Thomas Sports Park. And I know it's May. There's not going to be much negativity. If in May people are coming out and saying, yeah, the team kind of stinks. The vibes in here aren't very good. We don't like the coach. We don't like our teammates. Like, no one's going to say that in May. But it is a lot. And I know Jared's been talking about this a lot. It is getting to be a lot with the, oh my goodness, we have the greatest coaching staff and, oh, this roster's amazing and the locker room is immaculate. And so we're going to talk about that next. Is the positivity just getting a little bit too much? And can we even trust what anybody's saying anymore when it feels like we're getting sunshine and rainbow season? So that's up next. You're on Four's Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
You like the idea of, I guess, a fresh start coming? It seems like the first 2 years have been, you know, some ups and downs as well.
Yeah, fresh start is always good, especially, you know, when you're coming off of, you know, losing and all that. So a fresh start is always good. The buildings, the vibes are, you know, immaculate right now. You know, they're great. So we just want to keep building on that. And just the future is exciting for us right now.
Jig Okonkwo earlier this week, one of many Titans players telling us how great everything is over at St. Thomas Sports Park. Four's Company here on this Saturday morning, 9 to 10:45 today as we get you ready for Vandy baseball coming up towards the 11 o'clock hour. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier in studio, Connor Newt behind the scenes. Guys, I understand, and I said it before the break, that in May, no one's going to come out and say bad things about their team and their locker room. But it is getting to be a lot with, you know, Rand Carthon's appearance on Bussin' with the Boys saying how they had the greatest draft board of all time, where they knew where everybody was going, basically. And Calvin Ridley saying that Treylon Burks is some sort of combination of A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, and Terrell Owens. And Chig and Arden Key saying how much better things are now with the new coaching staff. Like, we get it. Things are good. But can we trust anything that these guys are saying right now? Because it feels like everybody's just trying to pump sunshine and rainbows and good feelings.
It's very hard to say yes to that. I mean, I will say, going back to Chig's comment there about it's an immaculate
vibes. Are immaculate.
Yeah, vibes are immaculate. The description of immaculate, you ready for this? It is perfectly clean, neat, or tidy, but free of flaws or mistakes. Perfection. It's not perfection at Titans.
Yeah,
camp. It's not. I don't see no perfection out there. Everybody's just in hats and jerseys. Like, let's just take a step back.
Let's get
relax.
The pads on first.
Yeah, let's get some shoulder pads on. Like, get a little crack of the pads. The people over at the Titans, like, currently, just like players and coaches, they got to take a step back. Take a little bit of some humble pie.
There was another cut this week. It was from Charles Davis. They did a sit-down interview with him on the Titans, and, you know, he calls preseason with Corey Curtis over on News 2. Basically, he said, everything is perfect, and Will Levis is the franchise guy. Now, I don't think we know the answer to either of those.
I disagree with both of those things.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with the Will Levis thing yet. I think we'll know this season if he is or not. If we don't, then that's a problem. But, I mean, things aren't perfect. No football team in America is perfect. There's no, unless you're, you know,
the Dallas Cowboys,
where everything is peachy and you can go 10-2 and then, or not 10-2. What is this, college football? You can go, you know, lose two games. My math is
11-5.
Yeah. Win your division and then be out the first round to the Washington Commanders or something like that. But yeah, it's just, I think there's too much optimism, and normally I'm all in for the optimism, but it's too much. There's nothing to back it up right now either. We're not in pads. We're guys in shirt and shorts playing, you know, two-hand touch out there. There's nothing to back it up. So, yeah.
And I'm high on the Titans. Like, I think they're going to be a lot better than the national media is giving them credit for, and the odds makers are giving them credit for, but they're going out of their way to tell us how great everything is, which makes you kind of think, is everything really that great? Like Rand Carthon's appearance on Bussin' with the Boys, like, I thought it was insightful. Like, I like to listen to him because I think Jared mentioned this too this week, that he is so much better in that environment than he is in a press conference environment. I feel like he's a little overwhelmed with all, like, the questions coming at him. But in that sit-back, relaxed environment, I thought he was great. But it was hard to believe some of that stuff, especially the draft board stuff. That one made me laugh. Like, hey, we brought Miss Amy in there, and she was amazed at how, man, the draft went almost exactly as our draft board said it was going to go. And I'm just like, I'm sure that there's some truth in that. I'm sure that maybe in the second and third round, things were going the way that he thought they were. But the way he said it was like, hey, we picked all 250 something picks exactly right.
Yeah, no.
We knew exactly what was happening.
No, not one bit. You look at Rand Carthon and his draft, and also to that point about busting the boys, he talked about the firing of Mike Vrabel as well.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I don't have a problem, but I just have a little tidbit about that. He mentioned his kids don't have social media and don't want, you know, the kids to find out at school and whatnot. And so I think it was his daughter that had a picture of Mike as a screensaver on her phone. I'm just like, that just seems a little, the way he was described is a little far-fetched.
It's going out of his way because I think he knew the, like, rumors that, oh, Rand and Vrabel don't like each other, and that Rand wanted Vrabel fired. Yeah. And I think, again, he's going out of his way to change that narrative. And I think that's what he's done a lot with, you know, I was getting texts from GMs telling me that they were going to take Devondre Sweat if we didn't. Same thing with Peter Skoronski. Like, I think he just wants to change the narrative sometimes away from, hey, the Titans reached on this guy, to, oh, no, I had GMs telling me they were ready to give an arm and a leg for Devondre Sweat.
It's so forced to me, and it comes out as corny.
Yeah.
Especially the Vrabel stuff. Like, my daughter has her screensaver as Uncle Mike. I'm like, Ran, I don't think you were the one that told Mike Vrabel the words, you're fired.
No.
I think Miss Amy was the one that said
and
it.
That's
he
what,
may have been in the room. But
that's what Rand said during the press conference that day, was like, this was Miss Amy's decision. I think he said that 100 times.
Yeah. So, like, you're stuck in, I don't want to say you're stuck in between a white lie, but you kind of are a little bit.
And, I like what Rand Carthon has done this year. I have no problem with the way he drafted. I thought the free agency was fantastic. I think they've brought in a lot of good pieces, but it's just, They need to media train Rand Carthon a little bit better. I think he's learning on the fly, because until you're the GM, when you're in personnel, you're never in front of the camera.
Mm-mm.
No one wants to talk to the director of pro personnel, unless you're the Titans and you put Chad Brinker out there and Anthony Robinson all the time.
Throws everybody for a curl, like, wait, who is this again?
Wait, why are we talking to this guy?
This makes sense. No, it doesn't.
But I think Rand is learning on the fly here, and But it is just funny listening to all this stuff this week of how great everything is. And it does happen every year. Last year, I remember seeing all the reports about how great Treylon Burks was, and he came out and did almost nothing. Yeah. So it happens every year. It just feels like it's on another level right now of, hey, we may have the third longest Super Bowl odds, but, man, we have the best locker room in the entire NFL, and some of these players that you're not talking about, they're Hall of Famers, and it feels like everything is just they're forcing this. We might be Super Bowl contenders. It's like, hey, let's just start with maybe competing for the division.
Yeah, like,
I'm good with that.
I get what you're saying there. Like, it's almost like they're putting up a screen of just great green
Everything's
stuff.
Everything's fine.
But at the same time, people got to remember, no DeAndre Hopkins at OTAs. Probably negotiating for a new deal. There's that, you know, speculation of he scrubbed his social media of all Titans content or whatever that was.
And then he posted.
And then you also got to remember, Devondre Sweat, he's nursing an injury. I mean, like, that was talked about a little bit.
Legarius Sneed, too.
Yeah, Sneed, not at OTAs. I mean, people are talking about his knees. There's a lot of these small little things that people are kind of forgetting, because you got Rand Carthon and the boys on Bustin' with the Boys putting up this.
Everything is fine.
We're great. Hey, it's all good. Double thumbs up. Wave it off. We're good. Yeah, no, that I don't think that's going to go. It's not flying with me.
If everything is that great, we'll feel it naturally. Yeah. You can't force it out there. And
yeah.
Like, you can't get in front of the media and be like, yeah, we're great. We're gonna be in the Super Bowl, and it's going to be awesome, and we've built this great team. If we see it on the field, we'll feel it.
Yeah.
You can't go out there and tell me, I don't know, like, a dog is a cat, and it's clearly a dog. I mean, I don't know. It's just so forced to me, and I agree with Jared on the sentiment that it comes across as hokey.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure outside of sports and whatnot, they're probably great people. They really are. But at the same time, we're all talking about them in the judgment of football.
Yeah.
And judgment of football is...
It's winning games.
Yeah.
Like, you're not losing games in May, so everything can be peachy. But we'll see. I think it's Caroline who's been saying it this week, that it's going to get old really fast if the Titans start 0-3 and Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan are out there still peddling. Oh, this is great. Will Levis, we love everything he's doing. We think that this team is good. Treylon Burks, hey, he's missed two games with injury and had no catches in the one he was healthy, but he is a Hall of Famer waiting to happen.
He's a great practice player. He's doing great.
I think that we're going to keep getting this until the bullets start flying in September, and then we will see if they actually were telling the truth and maybe the Titans are way better than everyone's giving them credit for, or if this is all just a facade, and we'll see how they react after that, because right now Brian Callahan is kind of being the anti-Mike Vrabel of, hey, I'm the nice coach, and I think everything's great, and Will Levis is the best quarterback ever, when Mike Vrabel wouldn't even compliment him after his 4-touchdown game against the Falcons. It's like Brian Callahan is trying to be the opposite of Mike Vrabel, which happens when there's a coaching change. I know at Virginia Tech, my last year there, when Justin Fuente got fired and Brent Pry got brought in, everybody's biggest complaint about Justin Fuente is that he wasn't out there. Like, he wouldn't go out in the community and wouldn't meet with donor like fans and all that stuff. Brent Pry was out throwing snowballs with students like the second day he was hired. So it's like there is a – you want to be kind of the polar opposite of the guy who just lost his job there.
Right.
But, again, the happy-go-lucky Brian Callahan will get pretty old if he's out there after an 0-3 start saying how great everything is.
And if they start 0-3, might as well just put Caleb Farley at wide receiver like that one caller said.
Slot.
I mean, yeah, at the slot, excuse me. Yeah.
Slot receiver and kick returner for Caleb Farley.
That's right.
I did see a tweet that he had a breakup on Treylon Burks, and we all know that Treylon Burks is, I mean, he's Terrell Owens. So.
And Julio Jones.
And Julio Jones.
And A.J. Brown.
And A.J.
All
Brown.
All rolled into one.
So Caleb Farley, I mean, what does that make Caleb Farley?
Deion Sanders?
Darrell Revis?
I mean...
Brian Dawkins.
Hey, if he moves to
play safety.
Safety.
Yeah.
If he moves to safety. I'd love to see Caleb Farley move to safety. I think that might help. But
yeah.
Anyway, we're not completely buying the sunshine and rainbows from the Titans. We'll see when they step on the field for game one. Against the Bears.
Yeah.
Whether it's actually true or not, or if they're just trying to put up this smokescreen like we've been talking about.
I mean, if it's sunshine and rainbows, I'll take a cone of ice and I'll sit in a lawn chair and watch practice.
Yeah.
That's how much I'll buy into
and
it.
Nice little lemonade.
I would love, if the Titans go start 4-0, Will Levis is the city's savior and Brian Callahan is one of the greatest coaches of all time. I'm in. I will be pumping the sunshine and rainbows right with you. I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet. It's only May. Let's get into training camp, get into the preseason, and then actually play some football before we start crowning off-season champs, which I think the Titans are kind of wearing in stride right now. Like, I think Jared mentioned it too. Like, Titans fans always made fun of the Jaguars for winning the off-season. Titans are kind of in that boat right now. Let's see how Calvin Ridley and L'Jarius Sneed play before we start saying that this was the greatest off-season of all time from Rand Carthon. 615-737-1025 if you want to join the conversation. Our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, it's time for Newt's Notes. Connor takes over the program as he always does at 945 here on Force Company, Saturday mornings here on 1025, 1063 The Game. Purchase your tickets now for the Music City Grand Prix at the Nashville Super Speedway Friday, September 13th through Sunday, September 15th at MusicCityGP.com. As the Racing Station 1025 The Game has a special offer for a limited time, use promo code GAME for a 20% discount now through June 16th. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier with you here on Forrest Company. No Nick Keezer this week. He'll be back next week. But this segment's all about Connor Newt. It's time for Newt's Notes.
All right, let me talk to you. So speaking of sunshine and rainbows, John Calipari obviously leaves Kentucky, takes the Arkansas job, has no team whatsoever, not a single player on the roster. So they had him on the other day. I think it was just a media scrum. They had him, and he had some interesting answers to a question, but there's one in particular, and I have some thoughts on this. This is what John Calipari had to say the other day in his media scrum.
What you're doing, but it was hard because I had no players. Now, I want you to understand what I said. There was no team, and we're at 8 right now. We're at 8. I'm ecstatic. I'm looking for one more guy, and that's what we're going to have.
8 players, and he's looking for one more. He's going to have a 9-player rotation. In basketball, you cannot have a 9-player rotation, especially with the injury history that John Calipari's Kentucky teams have had. Last year, he ran about an 11-man rotation, and he started the year with no center whatsoever. No Ugo Onyenso, no Big Z, no, who was the other one? Aaron Bradshaw. And another thing he went on to say was that he has to change his system. You're just now realizing this? Why didn't you realize this when you were getting beat by St. Peter's in the first round? Or better yet, 2014, or 15, I mean, you have arguably the best team ever with Karl Anthony Towns and Devin Booker and Trey Lyles and that whole bunch. And you lose in the Final Four to a Wisconsin team with Frank Kaminsky. Granted, Frank the Tech
and Sam Decker.
And Sam Becker. So my thing is, like, he says he wants to run less freshmen. He's cut his freshman numbers down by, like, 1. And literally every player on Arkansas he has come from Kentucky aside from 2. And those are John L. Davis from FAU and I think it's Jonas Adu, actually, from Tennessee. And his shooting is just decreased as well. I mean, you lose your 3 best shooters. Antonio Reeves graduates, obviously. Reed Shepard and Rob Dillingham go to the NBA. And then you bring over guys like DJ Wagner, who had his struggles last year. Adu Thiero, who barely played. Big Z had his struggles, barely played. All these Kentucky guys that you're running essentially the same offense with, and you claim it's a new system. I just don't understand the philosophy behind this man. He's the definition of a sleazy car salesman to me. It's just, and I'm getting on a long-winded whiny rant, but that's just my thoughts. I mean, I can't be the only one that feels this way.
You know what it tells me? He's out of Kentucky. Calipari's gone from Kentucky. Look what it's doing to Kentucky fan right now.
Yeah,
oh,
it's
no,
true.
I'm happy he's gone.
Oh, I know, but you're still talking about him.
Rent free.
Yeah. He is living in Newt's head rent free.
No, it's just he drives me crazy, and I pity the Arkansas fans that have to deal with him.
No, but I get it. Like that. Saying I have 8 players, I'm looking for one more is crazy. Like, yes, if you have a good 12-player roster, maybe only 9 are going to play consistent minutes, but you've got to have some depth there. Like,
you know how many players Mark Pope has on his roster right now? 11.
Yeah.
And he's looking for 1 to 2 more. He's going to run a 12, 13-man rotation, and even the 12 and 13 may not play that much. It's just it really shows you, like, the difference in coaching. Kind of like what we were talking about. You kick John Calipari out, and Mark Pope comes in and says the exact opposite.
Yeah.
He says, you know, we're going to go play in the Maui. We're not going to just run freshmen. We're going to actually compete in the SEC tournament, and we're going to look to win a national championship, which is what every coach says. But then one of the big things on Calipari was he didn't, you know, he was never willing to adjust. And then Mark Pope comes in. He's like, hey, I'm ready for feedback. I'm ready to do whatever administration tells me to do to adjust. And because I love this university and I love this team. It's so different to me.
Yeah. And just like we were talking about with Vrabel and Callahan, before you coach your first game, all you're trying to do is win over the fan base. So you're going to say all these things where if the biggest complaints about Calipari were he wasn't flexible and he only played freshman and he was kind of set in his ways. Like Mark Pope's going to come out and just be like, oh, we're going to run 12-man rotation of only seniors. Like, it's gonna be the opposite because he knows that's what the fans want to hear. We'll see what things actually look like when he actually has to do his job and coach a basketball game.
Yeah, and that's the concern for me. The verdict on Mark Pope is still out there, but at BYU, at least, he was a big X's and O's guy, big offensive-minded guy, lots of shooters, lots of... And whereas John Calipari was just, you know, NBA pro-style offense, ISO, swing the ball, shoot a corner three. That's how he works. And then we just won't get back on defense. We're just not going to do that. John Calipari is prone to let one guy on a team beat him. Like, you saw it last year, Oakland, it was Jack Golke. On St. Peter's, it was Doug Eder. And then what was the year? Kansas State, it was... The short guy,
Noel.
Yeah, Marquise Noel. Yeah, he's just prone to let one guy beat him, and he's been doing it for years. You know, Wisconsin, I mentioned, it was Frank Kaminsky, and then I just don't see how he's going to change, and it's not a 1-year fix either, especially with the guys he's bringing in. You're bringing in literally the exact same team plus your recruits. Only two of your recruits you were bringing in because the rest of them split. You're bringing in Boogie Fland and Billy Richmond. But it's just, I don't know, man. Like, maybe it is rent free. Maybe I'm just obsessing over this because I'm mad.
No, I think you're onto something because Mark Pope said he has looking for 12 to 13 guys, whereas Calipari is looking for just one more with nine. Maybe Calipari has Pope living in his head rent free. Maybe it's the other way around. There you go. Maybe.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, you run nine guys, one or two of them get injured, you got two men coming off the bench.
Yeah.
That's a 7-man team. That's not good.
You're talking about church league basketball.
Yeah. That's rec league right there.
I can't wait for Newt's Notes when Arkansas plays Kentucky first time.
In Rupp Arena.
It is
in Rupp. Yeah. That's sweet. The only time they play this year,
You too. Know that's going to be... Primetime Saturday, game day's coming that morning. That's going to be an electric factory.
I can just see him walk in the studio half white, blue, just all painted up.
We're gonna have a full 2 hours of Newt's Notes just previewing Kentucky, Arkansas that day.
I'll get Matt Jones on with us. How about that?
Perfect.
Thank you, Connor. Good stuff. Talking Kentucky basketball on Newt's Notes. Tune into 102.5 The Game. Today's the Nashville Cats take on the Albany Firebirds. Pregame at 4, kickoff at 4:30, with coverage also available on the 102.5 The Game app and at thegamenashville.com. Cats football coverage presented by Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. A reminder, we're off a little bit early today. Vandy baseball pregame coming up at 10:45. First pitch against High Point is at 11. We're going to talk some college baseball coming up in a little bit. Also want to revisit our question of the day. What is the best atmosphere in college football as we count down the days to the new season? You can text or call on our phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that, and we will start our college baseball talk a little bit here on Four's Company, Saturday mornings on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.